Welcome to the Never Settle podcast. My name is Mel Clark, and I am passionate about helping people realise that settling for second best is no longer an option, and that everyone deserves to live the life they truly desire. Hello, lovely people. Today, I had the honour of actually having a conversation with my son, Jake Crook. It came about because my interview guest for today couldn't do it due to illness, and I just asked him on the spur and he said yes. Jake is an awesome individual, only 23 but very wise beyond his years, and he's my biggest teacher, if I'm perfectly honest. And he is somebody that, although is still finding what he wants in the world, he is somebody that definitely knows what he doesn't want and has made, you know, strong decisions over his relatively short life so far in terms of how that's played out. And I keep trying to get him to read The Surrender Experiment, which I bought him nearly 2 years ago now, because I feel like his life is like that anyway. He's so laid back, things just come to him, and good things as well. As you know, it's not all been roses, he's had his issues as well. But it's just a wonderful insight into a young man's journey that didn't go the usual route of university, did something different, has suffered with anxiety and the symptoms of lockdown like a lot of people, but how his wonderful, magical, mystery life so far has played out. And I, for one, am very proud, of course. And you know what? It was really nice to do a podcast in person. So wherever you are, taking a walk, in the car, or having a drink, listen to the wonderful sound of my son, Jake Crook. Well, hello, lovely listeners. Today, it is an absolute honour to have my beautiful son on the podcast, Jakey Boy. And literally, we decided to do this about an hour or so ago because I did have somebody booked in today and due to illness, they couldn't do it. And I thought, oh, Christ, I better do one myself then, just talk about myself or whatever with this new program that I'm doing. And then I thought, no, let's get Jake on because he's an inspiration to me. He's one of my biggest teachers, that's for sure. And Jake he's a stubborn bugger at times, but... He knows what he doesn't want, for sure. I think he's still on his path to figuring out what he does want, but guess what, aren't we all? So, and he's certainly somebody that doesn't settle in life. So I thought it would be amazing to hear Jake's story up till now. Jake is 23, but he's done a lot actually, and it drives me nuts because at his age, I was hustle, 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 hard work, hard work, hard work. Jake lies in bed and it all just falls in his lap. He is the epitome of the secret. So anyway, Jakey, welcome and thank you so much for being on the podcast today.
Yeah, no problem. Definitely didn't think when I was waking up this morning that I was going to be on the podcast, but there you go. I actually used to have my own podcast, completely different structure and topics, but it's been like 2 years since I've probably done a podcast format, so yeah, happy to get into it.
Cool. So the usual conversation I love to have on these podcasts is just natural conversation, but understanding more about your backstory, what influenced you when you were younger, sort of what has created the forks in your pathway, what has incentivized you to where you've got to today, because obviously I'm your mum and I know a lot of what you've been through, but I'm sure there's some stuff that you never shared with me, and I'm not saying that you need to today, by the way, but it's great for the listeners to know more about sort of what influenced you growing up. Can you please stop moving on that stool?
Sorry.
Yeah, and sort of where you are and how you got to where you are right now today. So over to you.
Yeah, so it's quite an open-ended question, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think that, yeah, maybe to go off to you when I was quite a lot younger and kind of like start off with my aspirations of where I thought life was going to take me. So I was kind of 13, 14, even younger than that maybe, like I always used to love film and TV. And yeah, I think I used to look at a lot of, you know, the different aspects of film and TV and not just take it from as an entertainment, from an entertainment perspective. It was more like, oh, how did they create this and how did they do that? And like, you know, like the different actors and the nuances in their different roles and all this kind of thing. Like the basically like the production behind like TV and film. And then I kind of got to like 15, 16, and I kind of, again, was still really focused on that. I also really enjoyed a lot of graphic design. So when it came to like, you know, things like, yeah, like say graphics and again, that kind of builds into that, you know, film CGI and how do they create these scenes that aren't real, that they look really, really real. Like I was really like wrapped up into, I guess, the media side of, or the film and, yeah, the film and media side of the world. And I thought that's kind of where I was gonna go down. So I decided to essentially take a bit of a risk with that, because I remember going to sign up for sixth form, which you might know if you might remember that, and then getting there and just realizing that it just wasn't for me. I was like looking, I was meant to do like psychology and business and something else, and I was just like, like this is going to be great for me to get to uni, like is this going to have any actual like tangible real life skills for stuff I want to do in the future other than get me to uni, which is obviously just more education. So then I think I was like, cool, I'm going to go to college and do this film and production course, and hopefully that gives me a bit more insight and I'm going to learn some like proper like hands-on skills with, again, camera equipment, editing suites, etc., etc. So that's kind of what I did. But unfortunately for me, I guess, yeah, like there was a lot of things that happened during my college 2 years, which essentially, you know, like certain things like grades, I didn't get that I wanted to go, you know, that would have propelled me off to actually go to uni and do like a specific, course in Manchester Uni, I remember that was around film production, that would have propelled me to do that. But yeah, I the whole experience of the 2 years, I just kind of got a bit disheartened because I thought I was doing great work, which I actually think, I still think that I was. I think there was just a lot of corruption going on, and this goes for everybody.
Corruption, yeah,
a lot of corruption going on for everybody. And at the college at the time, because essentially what was happening, which I found out a lot later, was that the kind of like the dean of the college essentially wanted to remove funding from certain areas of the college and move it into other areas. And one of the areas that they would wanted to remove funding from was my course and the sector of course, loads of other courses, but mine was one of them. So I just got impacted. So essentially, conspiracy theory alert, what would they think was happening was they were down, the dean was getting tutors to downgrade your sort of results. So then it would look a bit, you know, not great, like a bit crappy. And then they'd be like, well, that's not working out for us. Let's pull funding from this course, get rid of it and put it to here. So that's essentially the conspiracy theory with that and why, yeah, a lot of people, again, not just even on my course, but there's loads of different courses at the college, ended up getting screwed over a bit. So again, at the time, I didn't really know that. I found this out quite a long time after. But anyway, I decided to, so I left college feeling a bit disheartened and I just was like, you know what, maybe this TV and film thing just wasn't for me. Like, you know, maybe I gave up a little bit too easily, but I think I just had like over a year of just like crap. I just think I needed to.
You were really disappointed.
Yeah, I just really was disappointed. And I think at the time I just didn't have full context, which made it even worse. But that kind of ended up then pivoting me into just kind of like sticking at my part-time job that I had throughout college, which was working at Co-op. So literally I used to just work in the local shop and like, you know, start the showers, work in the till, etc., etc. And then I was like, you know what, I'm going to take a gap year off uni, because I could have gone to uni if I wanted to. I might have had to have done a foundation year just because of the, you know, if worse comes to worse, I could have gone to uni, maybe done a foundation year or, you know, scrape through with the grades that I had. You know, I don't know if people know about UCAS points, but essentially it's like the point grade and how you get into university. Like I was like quite low on the UCAS points. So it was, yeah, it felt like I was just going to go to uni for the sake of it, because I wasn't actually going to go to the uni and the place that I cared about. So it didn't really make sense in my head. So I was like, okay, cool. Let me take a gap year out and then, you know, figure it out. Maybe I go back to college and do the final year and resit and so I can get more UCAS points. Maybe I do a year at sixth form college to get one A-level to boost my points up. Or maybe I just go find a job and just see what I like or whatever. So what ended up happening was during that time, I think one of my mum's friends was basically just like, oh, Jake, hey, what are you up to? And I was just like saying, you know, I'm just on this gap year, I don't know what I really want to do. She was basically just encouraged me and set me up with somebody at a marketing agency. And I ended up wanting to really just go there for like kind of work experience. And then what ended up happening was I kind of went for this assessment day. I think they were like, oh, we might as well just throw me on this assessment day. And it was kind of like a grad scheme, like role. So like there was nobody, you know, younger than sort of 22, 23 at that time. Bearing in mind I was 18 at this point. And yeah, there was nobody younger than like sort of 22, 23, because obviously it was a grad scheme and you're meant to have, you know, certain degrees and this and that to be able to even qualify for the role. But yeah, what happened is I ended up doing the assessment center. I ended up like you know, must have just done really well or whatever. And they ended up offering me a full-time job, which was kind of, in that moment, you know, like really great for me, because it meant like, okay, I'm not having to work for free doing work experience. I'm going to actually get paid. And I was like, oh, this is a mad, I'm doing this like role all these graduates that I've just been to uni for 3 or 4 years are doing, and I'm just like, 18-year-old me is just like popped in and I'm, you know, I'm doing the exact same thing. So for me at that moment, it really like was service to requirement, and it worked out quite well for me. So I did that for about a year, just over a year, and it was on a contract basis. And unfortunately, kind of towards the end of that year, a lot of the funding for this, long story short, but a lot of the funding for that business kind of, all the money, the cash flow kind of was dropped down, so they had to get rid of a lot of people. So for me, it was kind of easy to get rid of me, because...
Just to say that it was basically attached to JLR, Jaguar Land Rover, and at the time they'd been going through a load of redundancies yet again, and that's what happened, wasn't it?
Yeah, so obviously the easiest people to get rid of were the contractors, because we're not actually signed to a full, you know, even though I felt like I was part of it, I was technically just a contractor for like 12, 15 months or whatever. But it kind of got towards the end of the year of me doing that. And obviously I knew there was this kind of deadline was coming up. Obviously the finances for the company weren't looking great. And I was like, well, I'm going to have to do something else. So I ended up applying for like loads of like, at this time, a lad that I used to work with, who was a lot, at the time was a lot older than me. He was like 29, about to be 30. I was just like, oh, you know, if I was your age again, because he'd gone to uni, and he's like, if I was your age again, I'd go an apprenticeship. And up until this point, I kind of thought about apprenticeships, but I hadn't really like, you know, you think of the typical apprenticeship scheme as kind of like, you know, your hard hat worker, right? You know, like building sites, construction,
manual and stuff,
manual labor. And I was like, well, that's not really me. So like, I was like, you know, that was to me, again, there was no education in school or college about any of this. It was just like uni. So it was kind of like, okay, cool. Let's have a look at these apprenticeships. Is there any that are like not just in like manual labor or, you know, kind of them kind of jobs? So I ended up coming across a few. I applied. I can't remember the name of the website, but it was basically an apprenticeship kind of website that connected you with like loads of other apprentice schemes from different big companies in like the UK, etc. So I applied for a few of them. One would be a National Grid, like a project management one, and there was like loads of other project management ones that I did. There was a few media ones, and the one that I really wanted to do was basically a commercial apprenticeship at Aston Martin, which essentially meant I would have rotated around the businessy side of Aston Martin, so it wouldn't have been like on the track or, you know, creating the cars. It was more like around like the marketing, finance, like doing a rotation with that way. And then they would also paid for me to go to uni at the same time, which I would have got a qualification from Warwick Uni. Which obviously to me was like a big finesse, because I was like, well, I've not even got enough UCAS points to get into Warwick Uni, but if I get this apprenticeship, then I would have somehow got into Warwick Uni even though I didn't get the UCAS points. So I was like, this is amazing. I was like, this is perfect. It was like 25 minutes away from home, you know, so it was quite close. I could have commuted, and it was like, I think it was 4 years in total, the apprenticeship was. And then you would obviously a full-time job after it. You would have secured a full-time job. So I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. Obviously what I shouldn't have done was, obviously I applied for a few, but I did bank all my hopes on that one. That was kind of the one I was like, oh my God, you know, like, this is the one. I'd already been working in kind of like automotive marketing for the year and a bit before. So I was like, well, this is perfect, because like, I've got the most, you know, most of the people that are going to be applying for this probably haven't got this level of like work experience. I've literally been doing the role for like the past year or whatever. So then, yeah, and then I ended up getting through to the final round of that. And I thought I'd got the job, but, you know, you have to go in a bit blindly confident. And I was like, I've definitely got this job, because there was a few spaces up for grabs and I got through to the final round. So there's only a few people that weren't going to get the job up until this point. And then, yeah, I got a phone call probably about a month after I'd finished my contract work at the marketing agency. And they were like, yeah, we're essentially pulling the funding from the course. We're pulling funding from the apprenticeship scheme and we're moving it into a completely different thing. So they actually removed the scheme that year, which was really frustrating because I pretty much felt like I was on the brink of getting it. So then I was like really down the dumps, because I was like, I've not got my life together. Even though you shouldn't necessarily have your life together at 18.
I remember you starting to question, oh God, I should go to uni. And then you started looking at uni again. And I kept saying to you, yeah, but you said you didn't want to go. It wasn't calling you. But you started to question or doubt yourself, didn't you? You started to think you'd made the wrong choices.
Yeah, so I think, yeah, again, it's like, I was kind of putting back myself into a corner, or it felt like it was, because yeah, all these things that I thought were going to work out didn't. And I took, technically at that point, I'm on my second gap year from uni, because the uni for the, you know, I took my first gap year, then I went into my second one to continue finishing an older employer for apprenticeships. So I would have been joining uni when all my friends were on the last year, which in the grand scheme of things doesn't really matter. But at the time I was like, oh, this is ridiculous. I'm going to be like a 23-year-old grad. Yeah. I was like, I'm going to be with a bunch of 18-year-olds.
I did exactly the same.
Yeah, I was like, oh, that's awful. Like, I'm going to be in halls doing this. I just couldn't think of anything worse. But I was like, again, service to requirement. Maybe it just makes sense for me to do that. So obviously maybe I recommend for those people that haven't got great UCAS points to do this, like, you know, flipping, send emails out to different people that own the courses at the different unis and I'd mention them on LinkedIn, you know, try and plead your cause. It got me quite far, I feel like. Again, it didn't get me quite as far as I wanted it to. Like, I didn't get offered the course that I wanted. Again, so that kind of got me back to being like, okay, maybe this just isn't for me. And it was just like this very big questioning period, I think. But then one day, this is after my month off of contemplation after the finishing the contract work and getting declined from Aston Martin, the program not being a thing anymore. I was sat on the sofa watching, God knows what I was watching on television, but...
Some crap, yeah.
And I get a phone call and it's like, hey, is this Jake? This is, she said her name, from Google. I'm like, this is random. This is in the March time, and I completely forgot I'd applied for this apprenticeship all the way back in September of the previous year. So that's obviously quite a few months. You know, it's been like at least six months. So I completely forgotten about it. So I'm like, who the hell is this? Is this like a prank call? Like, what is going on? Like, how, you know, but the one thing I will say is obviously I was signed up to all these apprenticeship application websites. So I was like, oh, maybe they've just got my thing off there. Anyway, they called me in for an assessment center the following week. And then they're like, oh yeah, you applied. And then it all started coming back to me. I was like, I remember applying using a dodgy Google form for some apprenticeship that I didn't actually think existed. Because, you know, Google, I mean, the apprenticeship at Google, that's quite a big thing, you know. I was like, I literally was on a whim. I was like, I don't even know if this is even real, but if it is. And cool, because I remember being like 13, 14 and watching the internship with my nan and granddad. And I remember my granddad making a comment at the time and just basically being like, oh, one day I could see you working there. And I was 14 at that time, so I didn't really have context of life and everything, but I remember just looking at the film and thinking, yeah, that's really cool, this innovative tech company. I love tech, I love all this thing, blah, blah, blah. And then, yeah, flash forward four and a half years later, like, you know, I'm going to this assessment centre at Google in London, and I'm like, this is crazy. So, yeah, long story short... long story short, I ended up getting the apprenticeship after the assessment centre. But funny thing about the assessment centre was, one of the tasks was to market a car.
Oh, right.
So again, it was just another thing that had aligned, and I just knew. Do you know what I mean? Mm. I was like, that just can't be coincidental. This is now like, this has happened a couple of times. So it was really strange.
And I was just going to say, there was about 4,000 applicants.
Yeah, 4,500.
4,500, there you go, for this apprenticeship, and only 17 spots.
Yeah. So if you do the maths on that, it works out as like...
I was a proud mama.
0.something%. I was just kind of like shocked when I got it. And I was like, I guess I didn't think I was actually going to get it because I was like, this, you know, so many people have applied, it's so competitive. You know, maybe there's people that have got more experience than me. Because this apprenticeship, there was people that had degrees going on to this after uni. Mm. You know, like a big chunk of them were. So it was like, they've already got all this stuff. Although apprenticeships aren't designed for people that have gone to uni, it's meant to be an alternative route, right? I think people that did uni realised, well, I'm not getting anywhere, so I need to do something else, an apprenticeship, another route. But yeah, somehow I must have just interviewed really well, answered the questions. Obviously, I had the knowledge and the work experience from the automotive marketing side of things, so I just had a lot of information. Plus, I would already know a decent amount about tech anyway, just having it being like a natural passion of mine, understanding how Google Ads worked and the general marketing industry, you know, a little bit. I think they just thought, yeah, this is the right person. So yeah, I ended up getting that. And then, yeah, where do you want to go from there?
I think it would be really useful because when Jay went on this assessment day, he particularly got drawn to two individuals, the lovely Enya and the lovely Max. And they were both there for exactly the same reason. And they hit it off, and afterwards they went for a drink. That's right, isn't it?
Yeah.
And Enya was working at
Harvey Nichols,
and so used some discounts on the drinks.
Yeah.
And then they set up their own WhatsApp group or whatever group it was, and were keeping in touch on the build up to finding out whether you've got the position.
Yeah. So I guess we just obviously became friends on the day, and at this point when we were chatting back and forth, but obviously none of us knew if we were going to get the job or not. Again, the likelihood of all three of us getting it felt quite small compared to how many assessment centres and how many people were competing for the roles.
It's pretty bonkers.
Yeah. So then we essentially, what happened is a couple of people in the chat, I think I was one of the last people, found out they got the job. And then we realised we'd all got the job. So then we were like, oh my God, like this is mad, like we've all got it.
And the reason why I brought that up is because I'm a big believer in there's no such thing as coincidence, and the fact that they were all drawn together on that day and the fact that they all got the jobs was just the start of their journey, really, in terms of how it's been entwined ever since and continues to be entwined, and the opportunities that it's opened up for all of them. And I just wanted to highlight that because the universe is absolutely beautiful when you recognise it for what it is. And Enya and Max are still very good friends with Jake now, and have gone on their own different journeys, but it's still influencing Jake's life. And Jake's another guy that was at the apprenticeship Wacky, who wasn't an original mate from that day, but you shared a house, didn't you?
Yeah, so with him, we weren't on the same assessment centre.
So he
would have been on a different day, so I didn't get to meet him.
Ah, right, okay.
And obviously what happened is a lot of the people, so the job role was in London, and a lot of the people that got the apprenticeship weren't from London, so a lot of people were either going to commute, or if there was like a decent amount of people, like maybe like moving together or going to spare room, whatever. So the apprentice lead, who actually is no longer there, but she was great. Girl called Lauren. She basically sent an email thread around and just said, "Hey guys, these are all the people that are thinking about moving to London for the role that aren't currently based in London. Like, you know, do what you will with that information." So essentially, like group chats on WhatsApp and things were getting created, and who's rooming with who. Yeah, so not who's rooming with who, but who's living with who. Does anyone want to live together? Like, can we just basically try and vet each other? But you know, by having like small conversations on WhatsApp, which obviously is just really hard to do. But at the same time, like, you know, with Google, like they're called, people that work there are called Googlers, right? And like the way Google pick these people is they all have similar traits and qualities. So no matter who I would have probably got picked with, like we might not have aligned all the way, like in terms of, you know, who I lived with, for example, but that's not going to be too far off because we're all, you know what I mean? Because the Googlers have this kind of sense of
like a base level of
So that worked out quite well. Obviously, COVID hit when I was probably like 5 or 6 months into my apprenticeship, which was obviously not great because I moved out of London. I didn't have I wasn't having like in that in the office experience on the apprenticeship. You know, it's a lot easier to learn things when you're next to somebody doing it. Like it's like when you, it got to like COVID, especially for the first year, because nobody had to do it before. Like working, everyone's working from home at all times.
Mm.
Like it was like there was everyone themselves was trying to navigate their own working styles. Let alone integrate trying to teach
some newbies, yeah.
Yeah, teach some people that yeah less experienced, like newbies, like you say. Like it was really really tough. So yeah, I feel like I definitely didn't get the full experience that I wanted to out of the apprenticeship. But at the same time, like I made the most of what I had. Do you know what I mean?
And also, I mean, the room that we're in at the moment, recording this episode, was Jake's office, and when he, because he had to come back home because Google closed their offices, and you were only what 19, 20, and it was just soul destroying for you in the prime of youth. Were you 20 going on 21? Was that yeah? Of course you were, because we had your 21st in the lodge. So just to sit in the house in a box room at that age, not getting the interaction, you know, it's not, and this is not just for Jake, obviously, this is for everybody that's been affected, myself included, was just crap, and really started to enhance certain things for you, didn't it, in terms of feeling more isolated and more anxious about things.
Yeah, so I guess, like, you know, the first couple months it was great, right? I was like, oh my god, because I lived in an area, for anyone that is a Londoner or knows London, like I lived in like northwest London in an area called Golders Green, and the house to the tube station was quite long, and this is like middle of winter when I've moved, or I was moving in, you know what I mean, as winter is just becoming a thing. So I was doing some like treacherous, I say treacherous, but like, you know, treacherous 25 minute walk to the tube station, then having to get the tube, obviously at 2019, like this is like peak. The tube is rammed. Like,
yeah.
I've been to London back since, and it's not nowhere near as bad as it was then, because now people are in hybrid work and things.
Mm.
But like, it was just crazy every morning. Like, it was just ridiculous. And like, yeah, I was saving probably like an hour and a half, 2 hours out of my day in terms of commuting and all that kind of thing, just in general. And you know, I wasn't having to be a brave the winter and get up at stupid o'clock in the morning to be able to get into the office. And you know, I wasn't having what some people call office fatigue, which is when you're in the office all day and you don't get outside, you kind of end up getting a bit lethargic. So yeah, for the first 2 months of COVID, I thought, well, this is amazing. Like, I'm working from home, I'm still being sort of able to do what I'm doing, but again, it's pivoted. I'm still learning. I'm probably not learning as much as I should have been, and I could have been if I was in the office. But I was like, you know what, just be thankful that I've still got a job. Because at this time, now everyone's starting to lose their jobs during COVID.
Yeah.
In the third, like probably the third month.
Me included.
It happened, yeah. Everyone's just like getting made redundant, or they're changing job, you know, all this kind of thing. And I was like, well, I should just thank myself that I've actually got some secure finances at the moment. But yeah, so then flash forward. So it's obviously just getting worse and worse. The more months we go into COVID, the more I'm just feeling like frustrated. And I'm just like realizing that there's more, like when you get to, I guess when you get to sit and reflect about, you know, when you got all the time in the world to reflect, when you can't go out and do anything or really see anybody, and you know, just in your own thoughts, I guess you start thinking and contemplating a lot about things that you're doing or things that you're not doing, more so sometimes. So yeah, I just realized that I was like, there's way more to life than what I've been doing at this point. Like I was very much letting things flow for me, and I wasn't necessarily always intentional about things that I'm doing, that I was doing. Does that make sense?
Mm.
Even though up until that point it had seemingly worked out. Mm, you know, if anybody from an outside perspective looked in, they'd be like, oh my god, he's like killing it.
As my sister always says, and she says it about me, but we say it even more about Jake, if he fell over and shit, he'd come up smelling of roses. And that is very, very true.
So yeah, I just realised, I was like, I gotta be way more intentional about things if I'm actually gonna be able to do.
But I think you were, without even knowing.
Maybe without knowing, yeah. Mm. But it just wasn't at the forefront of my mind, you know what I mean?
Like, you weren't letting the logical mind get in the way.
Yeah, it was all subconscious. Mm.
Which is the best way. Yeah.
But it just meant I didn't feel present in moments. So I didn't feel present in making decisions for myself, which is a weird feeling. I don't know if many people can, maybe some people can relate to that, but it's really weird just letting. Because it, you know, there's people sayings on people like, oh, just let things be, right? Whether that's an argument or whether that's things are going to work out, you know, the way they are, just due to circumstance, you should just let things be. That's all good and well, but I think there's sometimes moments where you have got to take the bull by the horns and be like, hey, like, I'm taking a bit of control now. So you can let things flow as much as you want to and, like, you know, see where they lead, but there is moments in life where you have got to, like, grab the horns, and I think that's when I realised that. Because I was like, okay, if I actually want to do something big with life, like have my own business or, you know, make X amount of money or be living a certain lifestyle, then I've really got to do that. And I, although as good as this flow has got me so far to where I am, I was like, to exceed my own expectations of where I want my life to be, I've got to grab it by the horns and not let the flow overtake me, and I have a bit of control of the flow, if that makes sense. So I guess I came towards the end of the apprenticeship, and, like, again, this is nobody from any previous apprenticeships had managed to get full-time roles at Google, I think, other than maybe one girl in, like, 6 years of them doing the apprenticeship. And then I ended up, obviously somehow I ended up managing to get a role. I think there was a few things to play in that, you know, COVID, and they wanted to hire more internally and all this thing. It also just so happened that the team that I was on did a lot of work with one of the teams that was hiring, where I ended up getting the role.
Had a great boss, didn't you?
Yeah, I had a really good a boss and some of the great colleagues that had helped me out as well. And I think there was probably a few things to play into that. But nevertheless, I kind of ended up getting this full-time role. I did transition to more of a sales role rather than a marketing role, which obviously was where I really wanted to be. But again, at that time, I was just very thankful for being able to have a full-time job working remotely still. Again, this is sort of peak COVID times. And again, most people I know still were getting made redundant, or people are like, you know, all these things happening, yet I've just got this job with a pay rise compared to what I was on, obviously, on an apprenticeship.
It was a huge pay rise as well, and also the job was permanently based in Dublin, and normally if it wasn't COVID he would have had to move to Dublin straight away, but because it was COVID the home working continued, and Jake never wanted to move to Dublin. He took the role knowing he was never going to move to Dublin, or that's what he thought. And I kept saying to you, yeah, but you didn't want to move to London either, mate. And look how that turned out. You know, I know it was only 6 months, but you enjoyed your time there. Don't write it off. So anyway, over to you.
So yeah, it got to probably like halfway through, my first full year at that job. And I just realised, I was like, this just isn't for me. Like, maybe partly it was to do with the role just wasn't as suited towards my strengths and things like that, but it was also just like, I think I had all them realizations in like 2020 and the start of 2021 about like me having to like grab the bull by the horn sort of thing. I was like, if I want to be where I want to be, like, I can use this as a bit of a springboard, but like I can't get too comfortable. No, I remember watching like loads of like self-help, I don't know if it's called self-help videos on YouTube at that time, but like, self-development videos, sorry. And like, just really thinking, and there's this guy, this American entrepreneur, he's on Shark Tank, I think, I can't remember what his name is now, but he has a great, great saying, which he just said, like, you know, a salary is the drug where dreams go to die. And I remember just really like thinking about that, being like, shit. Because like, it's really easy to get comfortable.
It is a good quote, yeah.
It's really easy to get comfortable on like a salary that's like, you know, my salary at the time was probably better than most people my age. I had some form of comfortability, and financially speaking, maybe not mentally, because the job was very straining on me. But like, you know, I just realised, again, like, if I keep letting myself get comfortable in these situations and letting the flow just flow and me be comfortable, I'm not going to go to where I want to go to. So I ended up inevitably, like, leaving the role after just over, like, a year and a few months, which put me at nearly 3 years total at Google, which I thought was about a nice about time to, you know, have, especially for the CV, if I want to do any more corporate work or, you know, just even on general, just having, like, on your CV, I've been at Google 3 years nearly.
Yeah,
you
know, it's amazing, yeah.
So it just all felt like the right time to leave that role in the company. I think I was a bit burnt out as well. I, you know, after like 2 years, two and a bit years or whatever of working from home, like I was feeling a lot of fatigue. You know, I had peaks and troughs of where I felt like I had like really good like time management and really good like work structure. But then towards probably the last 6 months, it just went out the window completely. Mm. And it made it more difficult. Again, when it's in winter, it's easier to be work from home in the summer. And you go for a quick walk in the sun and it's easy and it's blah, blah, blah. When it comes to the winter, it's raining, it's snowing, it's doing all this thing. I was like, this time I was living in Manchester as well.
Yeah, let me just make a comment on that, actually. So the job was based in Dublin, and Jake, even when he was doing the job, thought, stuff that, I'm going to go move to Manchester anyway and sign up for a year lease.
Yeah.
Knowing that Dublin was looming.
Yeah. I'd always just wanted to move to Manchester, so I just was like, I'm just going to do it. Like, whatever, do you know what I mean? And I'll suffer the consequences as they come. If I've got to leave the right job, or if I've got to pay two rents at once, or whatever the situation was going to be, so I'll just like deal with it at the time. Luckily, it worked out, in a sense, that way. But yeah, you got to, like, again, like I say, the last 6 months of the role, so, you know, which was probably most of 2022, or the first half of 2022, like, I just was just super burnt out by that point. It's really hard. I think people are like, oh, you know, it's so cushy working from home, doing this, doing that. Like, it's really not.
No, lots of people hate it.
People demand, like, more hours from you, and people feel like they can't switch off. It's like, if I'm in the office and you can see that, let's say our manager's looking over me, you can see I'm not at the desk or in the toilet or something, it's no issue. Like, they'll just wait till I get back or, you know, whatever. Or they'll give me space on lunch because they know it's lunch, they can see I'm not at the desk. When it comes down to working from home, it's like you're on all the time. Even on lunch, you get messages, even though you shouldn't be getting messages at lunch. And again, that's just the culture that working from home brings. And I guess for the first year, everyone felt like they had to work more to prove that they were working from home.
So they didn't lose their job, yeah.
Yeah. And like, even though work output was probably like 120% compared to like 80% that it was, or 70% that it was, you know, before COVID. So it was just crazy. Mm. But it's interesting to have been in that situation. But I've learned a lot of lessons about my own structure of my working days, you know, how to get the most out of a day. It's just sometimes really difficult to implement, especially when you're having a bad day, you know. And again, I think we all get a bit of seasonal depression, but it's really hard to explain. But like when I was in that Manchester, like my apartment, and it was like the middle of winter, and it's just got like nobody around, like there's no office banter, there's no other people than obviously on the video calls that I'm dealing with. It's not real human interaction, is it?
There's no real energy exchange, even though you don't need to be in the same room. Because we're all connected, it's not the same.
Mm.
You know, even like me and Jake were talking about whether he was going to go and sit on his laptop to do this or whether we were just going to sit around the mic. And I said, oh, let's just sit around the mic. And I've never done a podcast interview like this, and I'm enjoying it a lot more because we're actually in the same room.
Yeah, it's just way different. So it's like, okay, cool. I've learned all this information now for the last 2.5 years, right, of just like general work, knowledge of the industry that I'm in, which is obviously like marketing and tech and things like that. I've had two different variations of like working styles. I've done marketing, I've done sales, and it's kind of like cool. I feel like I've built up like quite a good base of what I want, what I needed. So I feel like I utilised the roles quite well in that sense, even though I probably could have made more out of it.
I think it's important to say though, Jake, because when all this came up and Jake was saying to me he just wasn't happy anymore, and you know, as most parents would be thinking, come on mate, you've got a bloody job at Google, come on, you know, what's the problem? Most people are going to kill for this role, and like most people have gone to uni, got the degree to get the job at Google, and Jake didn't do any of that, and here he is sort of sitting pretty. But at the same time, I could see that it was destroying him, destroying his soul. So he deliberated over it for quite some time before he finally decided that he needed to go. And listening to his thoughts and logic and emotions and reasons for what he was going to do, at the end of the day, it made perfect sense for him. And I think it's important to make a point of that, because so many parents push their kids down a route that the kid doesn't want to do, you know, following the dad's footsteps, whether it be a lawyer, a doctor or whatever. Go to uni because that's the thing to do. You're going to open up more doors. Well, for me, that's bullshit. I went to uni and it actually stilted my growth. I was always an entrepreneur, and uni is not designed for entrepreneurs. So So yeah, I just think it's important to note that even though Jake was going through anxiety and worries and stuff like that, he still had the strength and the courage and strength of character to make the decision that he made, not knowing what was around the corner.
Yeah, so I think, like, it's very hard to make that decision. And again, like you just said there, like, most people would be like, oh my God, you just left a job at Google that's like this pay. Because everyone just focuses on the
pay. Yeah, the pay, yeah.
It's just like the one thing, how much does it pay, like all this. But like, what I've also realised is when I was a lot younger, you know, even probably like up until I was maybe like 21, I think for me, like the biggest motivation was just like financial. It was like, I want to get the most money, which is still true to a degree, but it's also like, I realised that no matter how much a job sometimes pays, it's not worth the mental effects that it can bring. You know, for some people that's depression or anxiety or, you know, whatever it might be, there's all these things that it can manifest into. But like, if you're really not enjoying your role or the company ethos or what they're pushing on you or the working hours or working style, because again, everyone works differently, and it has too much of a negative impact on you. The money just seems worthless in a sense. It's just not worthwhile because, like, yeah, 90% of your time is feeling negative. So 90% of my time is feeling negative. 10% of my time is feeling maybe okay or good. And that's what, and you go and you're almost like blown all your money in that 10% time to make up for the 90% time where you're feeling shitty. So it's a bit of this weird perpetual cycle if you can't get yourself out. But for a lot of people, I think sometimes they don't realise they're in it, or they realise a bit too late, and then all these other more negative impacts happen to them. And it's like, no matter, even if it is too, not, if there's never, as I say, it's too late, there's never too late, but like, you know, you can make the change from the realisation, but you have to just implement it. And like, you know, whether that's quit the job, whether that's asked to be transferred to a different role, whether that's to, you know, whatever it might be, go on. For some people, it's like they go on leave, like, because they're, you know, what's it, like, depression, stress leave or whatever. You know, having them conversations with people. Again, like, I'm not saying go and, like, you know, tell everybody at work, like, oh, you're going through all this stuff. Like, just the relevant people that need to know, to get you out of that situation. And for some people, they're really sure to do that, especially when it comes to, like, your pride and your ego. You don't want to admit defeat sometimes. Mm. That's a bit of what I went through.
Yeah, and yeah. I think we had that conversation, and I said to you at the time, I can't remember how I put it, but it's because Jake was seeing it as he's quitting, he's failing. And I'm like, no, what's failing is you continuing in something that you can't stand. It actually knowing when to quit takes courage and strength.
Yeah, I think it's very hard. Again, maybe some of you that are listening to this are going to be like older and already knew that. That was obviously my first time really having to make that kind of decision from a work aspect or a career aspect. So it was really difficult.
And then from there, so my memory of this time was Jake just taking the first month to do Sweet FA and just enjoy and chillax and all of that, doing a bit of travel. You did quite a bit of that and visiting people. But it kept coming back to the conversation, and I'm very vested in this because if you've heard my previous things on the podcast, I do something called Ultimate Contribution Uncovered, which is uncovering people's core values, their core strengths, to allow them to create a vision and a mission that actually comes from their heart in terms of how they want their life to be. And from that, you can map out what your goals should be for the next 12 months. Not that I like the word should, but you can map out goals and actions based on a place of your calling, as opposed to, oh, I should be doing this in 6 months. I should have got that career in 5 years and all of that sort of stuff. And I'd mentioned to Jake for ages, it was probably a good 18 months before this, mate, I think it'd be brilliant for you because you don't know what you actually want to do. And he kept going, yeah. And then one day, I think you'd been off for about 2 or 3 months at this point, maybe a bit longer. And he actually came to me and said, Mom, I've been thinking maybe I will do UCU. And I was surprised. I didn't expect him to say it, but I was really pleased because I know the value that it was going to give him. And then you took some time to think that you actually wanted to do it, but then you decided to go for it.
Yeah.
And what made you Other than the fact that I'd sort of mentioned it before, what was it that got you thinking about that in those few months?
I think in the few months I was off, I think I was just like very, very lost. So I was like, if there's anything that can trigger a path realignment or something like that, then maybe this is something, you know, even if it didn't work out, I think the how much it cost, like it was worth me at least trying.
Mm.
You know, I'm someone that tends to just spend a bit radically with money on just things that maybe I shouldn't sometimes. So I was like, well, if I'm going to spend, so you know, a few pairs of shoes, or do I go and get this course that's going to benefit me, potentially could benefit me like in the long run.
For the rest of your life. Yeah.
I was like, you know, it's a fair trade, isn't it?
Mm.
Again, it's hard. Like, if you asked me at like 20, 21, the same thing, I probably would have chose the trainers and the shoes because I just didn't see the value in something. But like, again, as you get older, and every time you think, when your parents or adults say stuff to you when you're younger, you're like, oh, it's not going to be me when I'm older, or that's not going to happen, or, you know, that you know,
they don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah, it always ends up coming to fruition somehow. Even if it's not exactly how they described it, you get the sense. So that was kind of like why I ended up doing that. I think it's good for everybody just to, like, again, have someone that's not your, that you don't know, or like don't have any attachment to, giving you an objective view of your own life. Because I feel like we get, when you're in it and the people that you're chatting to it in your life and they're involved with it, they find it, a lot of people find it really hard to give objective or different opinions and different nuances, right? Because everyone's so like tunnel vision a lot of the time, especially when it's people that care about you a lot.
Yeah, we're tainted by our own perspective and memories and
exactly, and their like perception of you and vision of you and all these things. So it's like really hard. So having somebody that just completely doesn't know you and is like really being objective with what they're trying to do, it can be a lot easier. Which seems a bit backwards, but it's actually really helpful. So yeah, I definitely advise anybody, and this isn't just for like the ultimate contribution, but for any kind of like self-help course or development course or mentoring or coaching, like, again, you've got to kind of go in with a bit of an open mind. But if you're debating going on a holiday or taking this course,
buying iPhone,
yeah, whatever, like, really evaluate the, you know, put what would you value, or what would kind of come back to you tenfold if you bought it, you know. Because again, like, a car's going to depreciate in value, or most cars. Shoes are going to depreciate in value, again, most shoes. Your phone, there's going to be a new one every year, so you're never going to be satisfied. You're going to keep blowing that same £1,000 a year, whatever it is, if you're on contract, £80 a month or whatever. Like, you know, could that £80 a month be spent better off doing a course or learning this, or even going on like Udemy or all these other things, you know what I mean? So yeah, that's kind of the journey so far that I've been on. And obviously I'm continuing to grow and continuing to learn. Obviously I'm still quite young, but obviously
I think what's interesting though is you were partway through UCU, which is Ultimate Contribution Program. I don't know whether you were on call 3 or 4. And then Wacky, who was his apprentice buddy and housemate in London, right in the early days of Google, got in touch. And what did Wacky say?
Well, yeah, so obviously, we've obviously been friends the whole time, but he just got in touch about some work opportunities that he had. And essentially, it started off as a bit of just freelance work. But then it just got to the point now where there's just so much work. Like, this is kind of like what I'm taking as like my full-time thing at the moment. But again, I'm not going to say too much on that because, yeah, I just don't want to the moment. But I think the thing to let people know is, like, from my journey, it's probably been like 4 or 5 years. I've now finally, even after all this time knowing that I wanted to have my own thing, I've now got my own thing going. So it can take a big mental shift more than anything. You can learn a lot of these things quickly, right? These skills, like whether it's sales or marketing, there's so many resources online to learn. But I think that's the hardest thing is the mental shift. It took me like 5 years. I've known since I was 16, since I was hustling, selling trainers, that I wanted to do something entrepreneurial, have my own, you know, ownership of something.
No, you didn't even mention that, did you?
Yeah. But it's too long to go back into. But, you know, I've always had that mindset of, like, having ownership and creating my own thing and whatever. And, again, it took, like, 5 or 6 years to actually for that to come into fruition. So, and I think the main thing, I probably could have done it in like 2-3 years, or even shorter than that, if I've had the mindset shift that I had, you know, during COVID and things like that. But obviously, there's beauty in the madness. And although it was a bit of a turbulent couple of years, there's the benefit that I've drawn from it has been that mindset shift.
Have you nicked that quote from somebody? I like that.
No, I just thought of it off the top of my head right
now. There's beauty in the madness. That might be what this episode is called. I like that. I'm going to use that. But yeah, I know you don't want to talk about the current thing that you're doing, but I think what's important to know is that you talked earlier about you wanted to take control and take some actions rather than just allowing the flow to happen.
Mm.
And in making the decision to take control of what you cared about by putting some money into your own personal development, guess what? Your energy started to shift. And then because your energy started to shift, Wacky reached out to you. And maybe he would have anyway. Maybe.
Mm.
However, you might not have been receptive to it.
Yeah, it's difficult to say. Because obviously, like, you know, the butterfly effect. So if this didn't happen, then would this happen? Yeah. Blah, blah, blah. But it's... I'll have to say, like, regardless of whether it was the course that did it and the energy change, whatever, like, the mindset shift doesn't necessarily come from a course. Maybe it can be sparked by a course or this and that. The course kind of more is an incubator for it to blossom and grow. But you have to have that initial thing, right? And for everyone, it's different. But again, everyone's level of comfortability and things is different, right? I get annoyed at some of my friends sometimes because I feel like all their inhibitions seem so low, and that's not any like
slight
to anybody, but it's like, I remember my friend saying he wanted to live in the same town that we grew up in, which is Coventry in the UK, for the rest of his life. And I was just like, yeah, there's way more to the world. You know, even if you want to come back here and have a base, do you not want to go traveling? Do you want to do this and do that? He's like, no, I'm quite happy just having my 2 holidays a year and staying here. And I remember getting really annoyed. I used to get annoyed, so annoyed. I'd be like, there's more to life, this and that. What I've realised in the past year is that, again, the ultimate goal for a human being is to have contentment and comfortability. That's the end goal. So who am I to essentially say to someone that their lifestyle that they're comfortable and happy and content with isn't right, because that's the ultimate goal. And they just found it a lot sooner and a lot easier than maybe what I have, because I have bigger goals maybe. So now I just go through the idea and approach of like, okay, I'm not going to shit on anyone's parade because they found something that I'm ultimately looking for. I've just got to work a bit harder for it because my ambition's a bit higher.
Yeah.
But there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. Again, that's not a slight to anybody. It's just more of an acceptance thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Accepting your friends for who they are and your family for what they have and what they've done and who they are, and understand that everybody wants different things. So we shouldn't be getting frustrated and screaming at the wall, screaming, you know, whatever, having arguments about things and like try to shake them up sometimes, because they might just be content and that's the ultimate goal. So if they found it sooner than I have, then I can only applaud them.
And I think that's massive, massive awareness, Jake, at the age of 23 to have, because I certainly, as much as I like to think that I'm accepting of everyone and everything, I know that's not always true, especially in the last couple of years, which has created a confrontation in my life and with you as well, you know, when we've talked about the whole pandemic and what's gone on there. But to have the awareness of, especially in that scenario where somebody is okay with just having, I say just having, some people don't even have a holiday a year, but you know, some people are just comfortable and, like you say, content in knowing that that's what their life is and that's all they want, then you're absolutely right. Who are we to judge? And they've got that contentment where we're still striving and may strive till the day we die.
Yeah.
And I certainly didn't have it at 23. I think I've got it a lot more now, but I think still sometimes it's I forget.
Yeah. I think maybe there's some younger people that will be listening to this as well, and they might be thinking, bloody hell, this 23-year-old's perspective is just so different to mine. He's done so much different to me at at the ages that I've been doing all this. Like, you have to realize, like, everyone's on their own, like, kind of journey. And just because I had to go against the grain and do it differently to how everybody else did it before. And it's like, okay, it was a risk to do that. Again, it's in its way, it's paid off for me in a sense. There's a lot of negatives that also came with it, but there's also a lot of positives. But it's like, you just have to make sure that you're really putting yourself out there to be put in positions that allow these things to happen. I think that's what a lot of people don't do, especially young people. Everyone's so scared. Everyone's so scared to like put themselves out there and apply for this and do that, or like they're like, oh, I can't apply for this job because I've got to edit my CV. So what? Like, no, it's just not. You have to just put it out there, be a bit cheeky, be a bit confident, because nowadays everyone's got degrees coming left, right, and center, and it's no longer the same prestige that it maybe was 20, 25 years ago, even 10 years ago.
Mm.
It's like, back in the day it would have been, I'm in a job interview, I'm in a job. For example, like competing with two other people with degrees and everyone, and the other people haven't got degrees. And now it's everyone's got a degree. So if you haven't got a degree, you're the other one out. even though it wasn't like that. Do you know what I mean? So yeah. almost like loses its value, because, there obviously are times when you need to get a degree, whether you're a doctor or a lawyer, because obviously service is a requirement. Like, you need to have that, right? So I'm not saying to people that want to be a doctor or a lawyer, like, you don't go to uni, because you do actually need to go to uni for that. They're probably the only things you need to go to uni for. Nurse, doctor, lawyer.
Vet.
I think that's about it, really, isn't
there? I'm sure there's probably architecture and...
Yeah.
No, you don't. Archaeology, I don't know, whatever.
Maybe there's, like, one or two more things.
Yeah.
But other than that, it's all just, you don't have to. There's other pathway. So I think my round-off statement would just to be... Like, and again, I said this recently to my uncle. I said, I'm going to try to do something. And then I actually rephrased it. And I was like, no, I'm going to do it. And it's like, there's no trying. You do and it works out, or it doesn't. And you keep doing it until something sticks.
Mm.
So I think that's kind of where, that's probably would be my one piece of advice for everybody. Even if you're older than me, you're probably like, oh, this 23-year-old doesn't know life and blah, blah, blah. But from what I've realised in my short time, or not so short time on the planet so far, is that you just need to do stuff, and some stuff will stick. And you might go through the mud a little bit, and you might get slowed down, or you might get turned, or you might get this and that. But like, ultimately, if you have the goal that you're trying to go for, you'll achieve it. Even when you lose that motivation, you have that discipline as well. You're going to lose motivation. Motivation's not there all the time. I definitely lost it. I went into Google thinking I was going to get to this level of job and do this and do that, but like, I lost motivation along the way, because you get jaded by so many things. And it's like, okay, reevaluate, just remember, be disciplined into the things that you know are going to help to get you where you want to get to. So it's just about, it's about doing, and sometimes being disciplined. It's about like doing, being disciplined, and like pivoting when you need to.
Yeah, and taking imperfect action. I just wanted to put that in there, because you're on about the people that won't do something because they've got to change their CV and all the rest of it. And yes, first impressions last, especially if somebody's got 100 CVs in front of them. But imperfect action is better than no action.
No, definitely. I think we all get too caught up on, I've got to implement this perfectly. But the reality is, all the people that are doing well would never implement anything perfectly.
No, that's right. There's no such thing.
It's, what does that even mean to be perfect? Because on whose accord is that perfect?
Exactly.
What are the parameters? Like, fuck the parameters off. Blow the bloody doors off. Do you know what I mean?
Well, Jake, do you know what? This hour has flown by. It's been an absolute pleasure to interview my son. And normally at this point, I'll always say, if people want to find you, Jake, where would they find you? And you probably don't want to give out your Instagram, because I don't even know what his Instagram is, people. But what about LinkedIn?
Yeah, you'll be able to find me on LinkedIn. My LinkedIn is obviously just my name. I'm sure my mum will tag me.
Jake Crook.
Tag me or something on the...
On the show notes, yeah.
Yeah. So feel free to find me on there. Yeah, that's the best way to get in contact with me, to be honest. So, yeah.
Okay. And any final parting words, any words of wisdom, any pearls of joy, anything that you feel called to share before we say goodbye?
Just thank you for having me on. And again, going back just to my, refers back to my comment earlier. Find the beauty in the madness. And when things aren't clear, something else will always appear. So, yeah.
Right, that those lines are going into a song. So thank you, Jake, so much. Thank you for jumping on this with me on the spur of the moment today. It's been a real joy for me and a reminder of lots of things and definitely a reminder of how wise you are beyond your years. So thank you.
Anyways, cheers.
If you enjoyed that conversation or were inspired in any way, please, please leave me a review on iTunes. It's the best way for other people to find my podcast and be inspired themselves. Well, I really hope you enjoyed today's episode and perhaps the story resonated with your own life or reminded you that perhaps you're also settling for second best. I've been helping people from a young age and realising that there is more to life than what they are currently settling for. My desire is to give others the love to confidently and respectfully know their value so that they feel joy and are empowered to make a fulfilling difference. If that sounds good to you and you'd like to reach out and connect, you can find me at facebook.com/Mel Clark Coaching, that's Clark with an E, or instagram.com/Mel Clark Coaching. Enjoy your day.